Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's episode is an interview with TJ Power. Now, TJ Power, he wrote and directed the short film Your Call is Important to Us. This film pretty much cleaned up every award it could get at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2018. And everyone who was there and saw it still remembers it, still loves it. Your Call is Important to Us. It's pretty much one of the most entertaining, kick-ass short films that I've seen at any festival. Now, it's available online, but not at discoveryindiefilm.com. But if you go to discoveryindiefilm.com, you can get a link to where it's playing, and you'll be good. But before we hear the interview, I've always got to mention the basics, which is go to discoveryindiefilm.com. That's where there's info on the TV series and the podcasts. Oh, and did I mention TV series? Go to Amazon Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film. And there you're going to see 10 half-hour episodes that add up to 26 fantastic short films that you can watch. And if you do that, hey, why not be an awesome person and go to Amazon.com and write a good review of that TV series, right? You'll do that. All right, I think that's enough setup. Let's talk to TJ.
The passion for filmmaking, well, I guess it's just like a combination of events. Like, everybody's story is different and mine's not like I woke up one day and said, I'm going to do this. But I think I just always, like, of course, everyone loves film. Who's a filmmaker? Everyone who's a filmmaker says, oh, I love film. But I do like the control of the creativity, not just being a warm prop, I suppose. Like, theatre is definitely an actor's medium. But obviously, film is the director's medium. And so I've just had a couple of experiences where I was doing film and not quite enjoying it as much as I wanted to. And so I remember there was one film in particular, I just can remember the whole way through going, no, this is not how you do it. Like, oh, come on, you've got to introduce your characters better. You've got to, you know, set this up. And then I was like, huh, maybe I should do this.
And that was when you were focused as on acting?
That was, yeah, definitely when I was focused on acting. And I was out here, and so it was just a very different thing, because I'm theatrically trained, and so my background's in theatre. I also do a lot of film and TV back home in Australia, but,
But yeah. Jump back, like, did you start, what age did you start acting?
Oh, I mean,
like,
I did
really
the,
young?
I did the stuff in high school, like, you know, the school plays and stuff, but the first professional gig was just as I graduated from WAPA, which is the Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts. They, alumni such as like Hugh Jackman, hails from there, Jai Courtney's from there, and Tim Minchin's from there as well. But, yeah, so I got a theatre show straight out of WAPA. So I stayed in Perth and then had my first film in Perth and then my first lead role in a theatre show in Perth. And I was like, okay, now's the time to leave and go back to Sydney, because you could sort of, Perth's an amazing city and I love it. I just wish there was a bigger population to serve. So I went to Sydney and then I got a couple more jobs in Sydney, a couple of feature films and things, and I got a fairly like big break, so to speak, in this Hollywood blockbuster, and I was like, whoa, in my first year out of college. And I came over for the premiere and did all the meetings and all that kind of stuff, and it
kind of... How old were you? Like, that was still, like, the first year out of school?
I think I was 23, and I think I just turned 24, maybe, like, just after the job or something. And so, when I came over, I was probably about 24, 25. And then, I did the premiere and came over here, and I think it was a little waste of time, because the film wasn't out yet, and I wasn't, like, I was green, I had no idea about what was going on, but I guess then on the flip side of that, that's how you learn. And then, I came back to Australia. I had a manager in the States who was pretty pretty good to me and was like, you need to be over here. You need to be, auditioning over here and meeting the right people. And so I did the whole visa thing, and that kind of got delayed, so I did another couple of films back home, and then eventually came over here, and then my manager...
It sounds like several feature films you were in.
Yeah.
In Australia. And television too, or...?
Not television at that point. I mean, I had a couple of, like, guest stars, but nothing, like, no television roles.
But you were dealing... So you were dealing with cinema and seeing what goes on a set at that point.
Yeah, and it was... It was really, it was good because my first film was an indie film that was about, probably about $2 to $3 million budget. And it was great because it was everyone's first feature. Everyone was really, really excited to be there. And my second film was this big blockbuster. And I was excited to be there, but I just noticed that there were like too many people on set.
And so most of them just doing a job.
Most of them doing a job. Or like say if the seventh assistant director's job was to try and impress the sixth assistant director's job. That was the vibe that I got. I mean, I know it's totally different now, but I was learning, but it just didn't have the same, effect on me as the first one did. And then, so then I finally got over here in 2013 and the head of the company, my manager, passed away. So I was like, great. And that was like 4 days after I got here. So a few weeks later, I went home and came over for pilot season in 2014. Then my fiance at the time, she was going to come over for a bit of a holiday. We'd go back to Australia. But then she got a role in Cats the Musical, which was touring throughout South Korea for 9 months.
Whoa.
So I was like, well, I can't be there. May as well, I've got the visa, may as well hang out in the States. And when she finished that contract and we got married, we were like, let's just stay here. So that's kind of how we got here. Funnily enough, since moving over here, that's when the TV roles and things started coming in Australia. So
really?
Yeah. So I've worked more back home.
So you're a crazy version of bi-coastal. It's west coast of LA, California, and east coast of Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Just 20-something hours apart.
Yeah, I think that it's like 15 hours one way, 13 hours the other way. It's just, I don't know. But, it's too much traveling. The good thing is I love Australia. I love going home and seeing the family. But the annoying thing is you sort of invest your life over here and Australia keeps calling and giving offers that are too good to refuse. So, yeah. So, but the good thing is one of the TV roles that I... picked up, that is, if I didn't take that role, I was actually, I'd signed that contract the day before a contract for another TV role, quite a good TV show here, offered me a role on their show as well. It was a recurring guest, but they kind of beefed up the role for me as we were negotiating, but the other role was so good and had all these other things involved. I just couldn't say no to it, I guess, at the time. And so if I had taken the American role, I wouldn't have started directing.
Right, because your first film...
Was in Australia.
Was all
shot,
Australia.
Yeah, shot. And I wouldn't have been able to do it because, you know, as I did, because all of my contacts are, of course, in Australia. And all of... the resources and stuff were in Australia.
Right, because you had so much more history.
Yeah, I've been working in the industry for about 10 years, I guess, and so I could...
Right, so up here, if you'd just gotten the directing bug up here, you would have been starting from scratch.
Absolute scratch. And I, you know, now I have some contacts, but still it would be tough. I'd probably be tempted to go back home to Australia, which I just did. Like last month, I was filming my next film in Australia.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the sliding doors moment, I guess.
Right. So not taking the series here, you took the series in Australia and then immediately got the offer like the next day to stay here. But
yeah. And it was kind of like they were trying to make it work as well. And I was like, I hope they can, but they just couldn't make the dates work. And I was at the airport and I got a call from my agent saying, get ready not to get on the plane. And I said, well, my bags are checked, so my bags are going to Sydney. But but in the end they said, no, we couldn't make it work. See ya. So it was kind of bittersweet.
So you went down to Australia for that other series.
Yes.
And how soon after that did your call as important to us, like,
pop up? Like, had you already started writing it?
No. So, okay. So the first season of this show, I hadn't written it, but I'd wanted to write. I'd wanted to write a short film. I just didn't know what. I had some ideas, but I just didn't. I didn't have a way in or a why, I guess. Like, why would you write this film? I actually had the film that I just shot in January. I had that idea in my back pocket, but I didn't have the why I should make this yet. So there wasn't any point to making it. But then I shot that season, came home. I had this flash of inspiration, wrote Your Call Is Important to Us in the space of a couple of hours. And then when I went back to shoot the next season of this show, I really had a deadline and made it. I think there was one actor that I called that said, hey, can you do this? She said, yes, I can do this day, this date. And I said, okay, well, we're going to make that work. And so, yeah.
And everything else was built around that. That's how the schedule was born.
Basically, yeah. I mean,
it has to start somewhere.
It had to. I mean, that was the DP was obviously very important, but he was available on those dates. So if he said no, then we may have had to rethink. Right. But
and he's someone you knew from an indie film or a film? He's someone you knew from an Australian film you've been in? Or?
Yeah, he's actually he shot my first and last Australian feature films. So he was a guy, Dan Freen. He shot a film, Wasted on the Young, which is my first film, and another film he shot, Other Life, which was the last film I shot in Perth, which played actually the year before last at San Diego Film Festival. And last year at San Diego Film Festival, Your Call Is Important to Us got audience choice for best short, which is great. So that was kind of a nice little
kind of tells you something too. I will read this into it, but you know, not every actor who does a film comes out of it with a relationship with the DP. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds to me like you were very kind of tuned in and getting to know these people.
I think it was lucky that it was everyone's first feature film. But I also do like... I am aware that a set is a workspace and that everyone has to feel good to do good work. As an actor, I've learned that I need to carry ego on set. Like, and that doesn't mean to the detriment of others. It just means that I have to act and feel like I'm shit hot. Otherwise I start being polite, and polite doesn't do very good work. And so as an actor, you sort of get out of my shell a little bit on set on purpose. And you make friends and you try and make other people feel good. And I think that kind of translates to directing as well. But so I try and make friends. And I remember thinking that Dan was a cool guy. And I thought he was so focused. And the films looked really great. And so I'd worked with him a couple of times. So it was actually more than that. I think he shot a video clip, a music video for my friend's song, which I, play guitar in. And he also shot a pitch for another film that I was part of as well. So we've kind of worked a little bit together. But yeah, he was really great. And I said to him when I wrote Your Call Is Important to Us, I said, I can hear this film. I need you to see it. And he said, yep. And during that film, we barely spoke to each other. We were very well prepared, but we barely spoke to each other during the shooting, because I knew what he was doing and he knew what I was doing. And in the last film we shot, he shot it with me again. He was like the only person I spoke to, basically. Really? Yeah, it was just a very different style of film and different approaches. And it was quite interesting the way how the working relationship was different.
Sounds
because of the project.
Sounds like opposite.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So he was there. The actress that I called first was my old voice lecturer from Whopper, Leith McPherson. And she said, yes, she could do it. And I don't think she'd acted on screen before, really. But she was magnificent. She was Dorothy. She was the one who did the multiple voices.
Yes, who would say, "I have something new to try."
Yes, yeah. And she was offering so much on the day, and she's so playful and fast, very intelligent. So she was great to work with. And then everyone kind of fell into place after that, until I think the final person we cast was Simon, the guy who makes the call. And I'd met him on that TV show that I was working on in Australia the year before, and just remember laughing with him and, you know, just being cheeky and making jokes all day. And so when I was casting that, I thought of him, and yeah, that's how he
got. And I mean, you pretty much cast, was there anyone who was a stranger to you who you cast?
No.
Yeah, so another reason why.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone who sees Your Call is Important to Us is just blown away by the cast. I mean, the writing, the directing, everything, but the fact that everyone is so perfect in their roles.
Yeah, well, it goes to show that it is who you know, really, isn't it? Like, I mean...
Yeah, if all your friends were untalented.
yeah, but for actors who are going, "Oh, I just want to do a good audition." Yeah, do a good audition, but go out and make friends. Do those student films, like, go to parties and make relationships. Don't schmooze.
But like what you did, the films where you were acting, you didn't just go hide in the trailer or sit in your room.
No,
and wait for someone to come knock on the door and tell you to come.
Actually, a little side note, which is actually quite apt, I just realized, is on those films that I worked with Dan, I actually made a behind the scenes video.
Really?
So that was like probably my first ever thing that I directed, if you can say I directed it. But it was called The Actor's Cut, and it was basically, the first one was terrible. It was like half an hour. It was way too long, and it was just the lead boys in the boy side of the film just being idiots and running around and being stupid. But the second one was actually quite fun. I made sure that I got everyone involved, and it was much shorter. But we played it at the rap parties. But I just realized that, yeah. So I wasn't hiding in the trailer. We didn't have trailers because it was a low-budget film. But, I shot a behind-the-scenes video, so that worked. Yeah. But all of the cast, back to your previous point, all of the cast were either from my class at Whopper, or my teacher, or the guy who plays Dan is a comedian from Australia. So.
And did you shoot it in Perth or over in Sydney?
In Melbourne. The TV show that I was working on was in Melbourne, and the Pink Room was actually the TV show's reading room. And so we were looking for a space, and I was like, "Oh, what are we going to do?" And this kind of oddly shaped room was there, and it was terrible. It had like holes in the wall, and things were falling off the ceiling. And I just said, "Hey, do you mind if I use this room for my my short film?" And they said, "Yeah, that's fine." I was like, "Great. Can I paint it pink?" "Yeah, okay." "Great. All right, see ya." And that was it.
Right. So even at the script level, you had the vision of it being pink.
No. I didn't have a colour scheme. We did, you know, try and do it the right way and get a designer on board. That was her vision to get the full... So Dan's idea was to as the DOP, was to have, like, you know, wide lenses and shoot quite close and sort of a bit funky, like the film Delicatessen kind of stuff. And then Grace Louie was our designer, and she had the pink idea, and which I really like, because I guess the idea is that there's the real world, and then there's this like little, maybe it's like a little shoebox where these little lemmings.
I mean, it gives an otherworldly feel, definitely.
Yeah. So, everything came together very well.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, I was just listening to you and thinking, yeah, I bet a lot of TV shows would not let an actor change a room.
Like,
you definitely get, it sounds, I'm being overly general, I'm overgeneralizing, but it sounds like they're just mellower in Australia versus...
To be honest, I think that building has now been demolished, and they knew that was happening. But they're also extremely nice. Like, that was... probably, I don't know, one of my favourite jobs I've ever worked on in terms of the people that were involved. Everyone was great. They were very chill. This room was never on camera. It was only our table reads. Which, it was in bad shape anyway.
But I mean, here in LA, like they do the table reads, it's like, you know,
yeah,
it's like some sacred conference room, really, normally. But.
Yeah, this wasn't no sacred room. This was like a decrepit old old piece of shit, really, pardon me, but it was.
I curse all the time.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, they were very, very generous, and I'm thankful for them.
But so the WAPA people, were they all out? No longer in Perth. Everyone who gets out of there, they all head east.
Pretty much. I mean, they still work in Perth, and my friends do go back every now and then. Mainly the friends who grew up in Perth, but it is a smaller town, so most actors and artists go to either Melbourne or Sydney. Melbourne's sort of more of a hub because I guess the cost of living is a bit less, but also because the theatre scene is so much bigger there, and the culture scene is a little richer down there, I believe.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that Melbourne had a better art scene.
Yeah, I mean, you can walk from theatre to theatre. It's kind of like, it's not like New York, but in terms of being able to walk from one theatre across the road to the other theatre, across the road to a beautiful bar, you can walk from the biggest sports stadium in Australia straight into town. And
hey, no, I mean, like in LA, when we have Fringe Fest, which is a festival of stage plays, like, there's a place in Hollywood with, like, six theaters in a row. And it's just so cool. Like, okay, which one do I feel like walking into next? And yeah, it's great to have an area like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Sydney's a bit more spread out. And, it's not... doesn't have the same kind of... I don't know. The culture. The arts and sports culture in Melbourne's great.
Well, so you wrote the script, ended up in Australia... And then, but you wrote the script up here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you went down there and you're like, okay, this is my shot.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote the script here because, I mean, I don't know if
this is where you got stuck on hold.
Because, oh my gosh, I just can't, like, it's so strange how every call center you call, this is a huge generalization, but it's like, it's painful. I was on hold for like 2 days, basically, just trying to get an answer that was very, very simple, but it seems like I don't. It seems like it's almost designed to not be able to answer your questions, which is where the idea for the film came. I actually drafted or did the outline while I was on hold because I was like, are they really trying to screw with me? And I was like, yeah, maybe they are, and this is what's happening. And, yeah, it's just I can't believe what they... How, it's just like the... just no one's good at their job, it seems.
And yet you wrote a script where they're all being excellent at their job.
Because I don't believe that anyone could be that bad at their job. That's why. I was like, how is anyone that bad at their job and still have a job?
But then, and then you made the person on hold the antagonist in a way.
Yeah.
That we're rooting against him.
Well, if anything bad's got to happen to him,
it's a nice reverse, though. I'm saying, like, you pulled a really nice natural reverse as a writer.
If anything bad is going to happen to him, you can't like him. So, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, it's very dark, isn't it? I'm like, no, it's not dark. I mean, it's a comedy, and yes, but you're not meant to like that guy. We have no relationship with him. We don't care about this guy. And it's, so I don't find it dark at all, but I guess, you know, everyone's tastes are different.
Yeah, you know, we could probably discuss whether or not it's a dark comedy.
Yeah.
But it's... But yeah, what matters is that it's a successful comedy.
As long as it makes people laugh, and the best reaction you can get is when the spoiler alert, when the call is disconnected, and the audience every time I've seen it with an audience, they go, that means that they're with you. That means that they're not only laughing at the jokes, but they're also invested in the story. And I don't think you can have one or the other, really. You have to have both.
100%.
Yeah, and so that's the best reaction you can get.
Well, I mean, we're talking about it just now, like, as comedy and whether or not people laugh, but it's much more than a comedy. I mean, the reason you cleaned up all the awards at Sherman Oaks Film Festival is for the artistic side of it. You know, because you could have had all that, you could have had all the same jokes, but without the beautiful look and without the, you know, perform super memorable performances and the use of music and like what your DP did. I mean, artistically as a film, it's kind of like an an art house comedy in a way. You know what I mean? Well, you mentioned Delicatessen, which is like a great film by a great filmmaker.
Yeah.
Whose name is escaping me right now.
Oh, same.
And
The Shape of Water is very, very suspiciously similar to Delicatessen, don't you find?
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't he do City of Lost Children, this director we're talking about? Fuck it, I'll look him up.
Yeah, let's just look it up.
Yeah, well, my French is crap, but Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Yeah.
But yeah, Delicatessen, Amelie, Micmac, City of Lost Children.
There you go. Well done.
Fucking hell. Yeah, well, you were inspired by a truly great filmmaker, and I think I'm with it. I, you know, it has a sophistication.
Well, it's got to be like you call it sophistication, I call it kookiness. You know, like I just think that
like idiosyncrasy.
Yeah, if you're going to make something that's not real, you have to heighten it somehow. Like Quentin Tarantino. For example, his stuff, there's no realism in it at all, basically. But it's kind of there, but it's kind of not. Everything's always just a little bit offbeat.
It's gritty and unrealistic.
Yeah, and then he, you know, all of a sudden he burns down a cinema with Adolf Hitler. So you know, oh, this is not real. But there's these kooky moments in it where it's just offbeat, and I think that if you're going to do something that's a little bit crazy, why don't you just press on that? And actually, if I redid the film, I would turn that up a little bit. I think I would, not too far so people go ooh, but just make the kookiness a character in itself a little bit more.
Yeah, so you would go a little kookier in a way.
A little bit, not too much, but like it's only.
You don't have to change anything.
I don't want to shoot the film again at all, and I don't think it needs it. But like, if I had to, I would be like, okay, well, these particular moments, I think we could make. You know, the silent laugh where you kind of appreciate that's funny, like in Quentin Tarantino films or Coen Brothers, you go, oh, that's funny. But you don't have to laugh.
Yeah, it's so smartly funny that you don't laugh out loud sometimes. You're just like, oh, I'm so glad they did that.
Yes, yeah, those satisfying moments. I think there's probably more space for that. But, yeah, it's like all in the performances and
but in the direction and the cinematography. And I remember you saying at the Q&A at Sherman Oaks Film Festival about the musicality of it, that you were intentionally, I guess mostly in the edit, but also in the performances, but there's a timing and musicality to
comedy, it. Yeah. Well, definitely. I'm very inspired by farce. I think that's hilarious, and it's just, I don't know, it's so satisfying somehow. And maybe, because I'm a musician too, maybe that's why I like that stuff. But there's a play that's, funnily enough, Leith McPherson was the voice and dialect coach on, called Noises Off. That also, I was in it with Brent Hill, who plays Doug, the keys player. He was in it. And Gig was also in it. He played Gig Clark. He was the, I'm sorry, I didn't get that guy. And Fiona Pepper, who was the high fiver. We were all in that show together at Whopper.
Really?
And it's a farce, and it's hilarious, and it's very much inspired by that kind of stuff. Just like,
because Noises Off was also a very successful film, but I guess the film was adapted from the play?
From the screen, yeah, from the play, theatre play. And, yeah, but it's about, you know, opening and closing doors and time and stuff, and that's what this is about. It's like this guy just always misses his, like, his opportunities, or the timing is just always wrong. Like, he says his name and he's just about to say, operator, time, opera. And then the guy says, thank you, transferring you now. Like, those little tiny bits are all that about the timing. And that's what is frustrating and funny. And it's kind of like, everyone has those moments all the time where they just miss the bus, or they just, you know, they say something at the same time. But it doesn't happen that many times in 14 minutes. So you just put them all in it.
It's almost constant. But you're also rooting for it, right? Because you're enjoying what they're doing to the caller.
Yes.
And watching them manipulate time. All those times that they pause it. Actually, because you are making me aware that you're who I call your lead guy. He's basically the conductor of that orchestra.
Yes.
And sometimes he sits there with his baton saying, wait.
Yes.
And then he then the time is right.
Yeah.
Strike.
That was literally, I was like, he's basically the conductor, so why don't we get him doing the time, the conducting? So, yeah.
He's just another one. I mean...
Yeah, he's great. So he is the comedian. He's quite quite big in Australia. He does a radio show and stuff, and he's just like a funny guy and very... Very sharp.
Comes across.
Yeah.
Good casting.
Yeah, it's great casting. I actually hadn't written the film with any cast in mind, but they just, it's just perfect. I was like, of course, get Andy, of course, get Brent, of course, get Leith. You know, it just worked out.
Here, let me ask a your call is important to a specific question.
Yeah.
Since the thing about the podcast, the Q&A, we've got to get done in like 10, 15 at the festival. Now we got time.
Yeah.
Is your decision to focus so much on the musician?
Mm.
Like you start in the morning with him.
Yeah.
Making the audience think it might be a film about him. And
yeah.
Everyone in the room, Doug, right? Everyone in the room loves him. He's employee of the month. And they all think he's going to get it. And they're not even jealous that he's going to get it again.
No. That's one of those kooky moments where it's like, well, not kooky moments, but kooky aspects that everyone is just super happy to be there. It's just like, that's just the offbeat nature of it. But yeah, so I guess your question is...
What inspired you to focus on that, to start and finish, basically, with him?
I guess that like was...
Instead in that office with your person in the real world.
I guess it was because you're on their side. Because you're looking at it from their point of view. So if it was from the real world's point of view, it probably wouldn't have been... It definitely wouldn't have been the same film. It would have been like... It would have been from Simon's point of view. And
right, you would have been rooting for him.
Yeah, which means the audience would have been having the same experience as they normally have on the phone. Whereas if they're seeing it from the inside, it's behind the scenes. You're looking at a behind the scenes thing, which actually the stage play Noises Off does that. So the first, there's three acts. The first act is from in front of the stage. The second act, they've turned the stage around. They rotate the stage around. So you're looking at it from backstage. So you get, so it's even funnier because you're seeing all the activity behind the scenes. And so basically that's what this film is. We're turning the stage around, you're seeing it from the other point of view. And I guess as I'm writing it, this one came out pretty quick, like I told you. So that's kind of just how it came out. And I enjoyed the draft that came out, so I didn't want to change it too much because it was fun. And it was probably going to be more about Doug than it ended up being. But
we just started having so much fun with everyone else.
Just having so much fun. We actually, to be honest, it would have been more about Doug, but we failed to get a shot. We were a bit hard pressed for time, and I think it's totally my fault. But there was one shot that we missed that would have put us in Doug's seat a bit more. But we still had a film to work with, and yeah, I just think it's kind of nice to have, you know, the story of like. What really sends you over the edge? And I think, yes, it's like talking to the people and not getting your answers, but it's also like that fucking music. Like, it's always so bad. So I think that's kind of what the heart of the film... Well, the heart of the concept was. Yeah.
Well, cool. So you when did you finish it?
The whole thing?
Yeah, like, when did you...
We shot it in...
Or I guess I should not jump to that. I should say, so it sounds like the shooting it went well. Maybe you missed one shot of Doug, but obviously did you feel really good while you were shooting?
Yeah, it was an adrenaline rush like none other. And I was like, I've got to do this again.
And then you went into post and was the editing process at all?
So, yeah, it was good because I was in Melbourne.
It looks like it went well.
Yeah, and it was good because the editor we got was retired, so to speak. He's a young guy who just wanted to do something else, but I saw his editing reel and I was like, we want that guy. He's great. He's got musicality. He's got timing. It's great. And so he did a couple of passes, and then because I was in Melbourne for so long shooting this series, I was able to go off to his place and just sit right by him and say, no, half a second that way, a quarter of a second that way, and cut this, and we need that. So it was really, like I said, that timing was so important, and he was great. He understood it all. He had an understanding of the importance of the timing, and so we had few beers and a few pizzas in our time, and just got it done. It was really good. And then we finished the film. The whole thing, I think, was done by September or October that year, with colouring and all the post done. Yeah.
And then you were like, okay, I'm gonna hit the festival circuit with this.
Then we hit the festival circuit, and we were like, let's do all the big ones. And of course, they all were like, eh.
Which really, I gotta admit, I mean, I know I'm biased, or not necessarily biased, but I'm obviously a fan of your work and of that film. And I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of surprised that they wouldn't jump on it.
I think that I have a few theories, but I also think that the death at the end does put a bit of a negative spin on it sometimes, especially here, as opposed to, I think, British and Australian audiences love that kind of humour, and that the style of humour too is a little bit different. So I think it took a while till we found a few American festivals that really appreciated it, and when they did, they really appreciated it. But for the majority of it, it was sort of like no, thanks. Until word of mouth got around, and then when word of mouth got around, then we heard a few more yeses, and then people really got into it.
I've heard of that.
Yeah,
it surprises because you know. There's the perception that people care so much about premieres.
Yeah.
But then I've had a lot of filmmakers tell me, yeah, no one took us, and then you guys made us an official selection. Yeah. All of a sudden, I got into like five or six more in the next couple of months. And I was like, yes, I don't understand how the world works.
It's true. It's absolutely true. Like, I just felt like maybe I showed it to my manager, and she was like, I just don't think it's, I don't know. But I just think it's a bit too kooky. It's a little bit too kooky for people without context of it, of that kind of sense of humour. Like American sitcoms don't really translate to Australia. You know, it's just a different kind of... And vice versa, I think. I mean, there's a few of our comedies have tried to bring them over, but they just fall flat. And I think that's what we struggled with until someone said, no, this is a good comedy, and then someone gives it a shot and listens to it.
Yeah.
Or watches it.
Because it's interesting. I mean, listening to, I imagine that is true. And as much as we love British comedy here, or we have a fetish for it, I mean, you know, you think, I don't know why people are so close-minded, because like The Office, the American version of The Office, completely quirky and idiosyncratic, right? I mean, I can think of lots of things that are out there that Americans respond to.
But yeah, it's strange. But we've done well over here, but it just took a while for that to take off. Also, the bigger festivals I've also found, just from going and seeing their selections, there's a lot of, I don't know how to describe it.
Social justice.
Yeah, I call them backpatting films. The ones where it's like, oh, congratulations, you made a film about this thing, which is great. And the good thing is the best part about what we do is that we're able to educate through entertainment. So I remember so many films. I just watched Vice. I didn't know that. You know, I mean,
right, you hadn't been here for that. Era.
No, American History X was the first time I really realized, oh wow, this is what we can learn from films. So that's the good thing about films. But then there's the films that are like that, which are entertaining and gripping, and they connect with an audience and also educate or throw a light on an issue or a subject that people don't know much about, which is that's the essence of filmmaking, I believe. But then there's the films that kind of do that, but they're not as good. And I call them the backpatting films, that they're like, oh, well, if we tick these certain boxes, we'll get there. And I think a lot of film festivals jump on those things because their heart is in the right spot. But the problem is that the audiences don't necessarily respond to them.
Right, yeah, they're highlighting films with a good heart that are possibly a little flawed.
Well, good intentions. Maybe not a good heart. That might be giving them too much credit, but they're good intentions, and maybe in a way it's like...
I know, my God. You hope they're not sitting around going, well, if we put in some Native American lesbians,
we'll
get into the festivals.
Hey, it's a crazy world for, you know, people will try anything to get in a festival. I know that, but I just think that if you can marry entertainment and quality filmmaking and emotion, laughter and all that kind of stuff, while also addressing these issues, it'll be an amazing piece of cinema rather than a backpatting film, which, you know, so many... short films are so hard. They're really hard to tell a story, really short, in a truncated space of time. It's hard, and often they become either a bad comedy can be like, oh, la 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 la, punchline. It's like, oh, that's an expensive joke. Or it's a backpatting film, or a daddy issues film, which is even worse than a backpatting film because there's no social justice in it. It's just like, oh, I have a bad relationship with this person or that person, and this
right,
is
yeah,
why.
Like a vengeance. Oh, I'm going to get even with someone from my family by making a film about how shitty they are.
They never get into festivals, but there's those kind of things too. So it is a tough medium, but yeah, I just think. I've just gone on a tangent because...
that is what this is about.
Yeah.
No, I mean, one thing that happens when you go on the festival circuit with a film is you suddenly get to see a lot of your peers' work and what's being done and the zeitgeist of the moment, where what people are focused on. And it really does interest me because, you know, just year by year, the types of films that are submitted to festivals really vary. Like, there will be a bunch of things about immigration, and then a bunch of things about this, and but they do kind of seem to come in waves.
Well, there was this film festival last year that I went to, and I had a few of my film was in it as well, and I had a few of our cast come along, and the film there was one film that's quite successful, and it's won a few awards around the place, and I just don't dig it. I just think it's an easy, cheap... when I say cheap, I just think it's a backpatting film. Yeah. And a friend of mine was like, no, I really got it. I really kind of got this, that aspect. And I was like, no, you're intellectualizing it. Did it affect you at all? He was like, no, I got it. I was like, no, like, the ones that affected you are good films. They have to move you some way, whether inside or outwardly with a laugh or a gasp or a...
A film that if you were to see it begin again, if you would see the opening moments, you'd want to watch the whole thing over again.
Yeah, not this one that goes, oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah, that's, glad they made that film. No, like, yeah, it has to, you can tell that story. There's documentaries for that kind of stuff. I was just like, it's so intellectual, it wasn't at all affecting, and, yeah, it's just frustrating.
That's a very common complaint I hear from a festival jury is, oh, that one should have been a documentary.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, you see a little film about, you know, someone will do a fictionalized little film about a school shooting.
Yeah.
And not get it right. And it's like, no, in this day and age where that kind of thing is happening a lot, do a documentary.
Yeah.
Like, show us, because you're trying to be real, so just be real.
Or there was a great, I saw this great film. I was on a panel for a festival back home. And you see a lot of crap, but you can remember the good ones because they affect you. It was a beautiful film, and I forget who it's by, and I apologize to this filmmaker, but I will explain your film. Someone might look it up. But it was we open on a young woman in bed with her female lover. They're only probably about 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. Her younger brother walks in and catches them, and she's like, don't tell mum and dad, don't tell mum and dad. And he's like, oh, I've got you now. They go down, it's quite a conservative family. Oh, this is my friend, we were just studying together, great. Anyway, but then, so you think it's going one way. And then they go out to this club, and there's a shooting. And then it becomes about that, and how she now has to, I suppose, come out to her parents because her... partner has just died in the shooting. And so it starts somewhere and goes somewhere else. And the way it was done was brilliant. So that is not... That's a film that doesn't need to be a documentary. That's great filmmaking because it affects you. It shows you, oh, that's what it feels like. That's not what happened. It's not, oh, that's what happened. No. That's what it feels like. You can connect with it on a human level and you will be like, oh, yeah, gun control, or oh yeah, we need to, you know, like, it's just, it was,
yeah, just
grateful
to feel how those other people feel.
Yeah, compassion, that's what it's about. That's what we do, is connecting people at its core, right? And that film really did it. And if otherwise, make a documentary or don't make the film just because you think you're going to tick some boxes.
Yeah, you're reminding me, I used to always say, gosh, Christ, back in 30 years ago when I was in university, that, you know, it all started around the campfire. You know, we were just there was a storytelling around the campfire. You just had to connect people to the story and have them not find you boring.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And that's what we're doing now with drones and digital cameras.
Yeah.
But if you don't connect on a human level,
so what?
You're not going to get anything.
Yeah, this is so what films.
Yeah, very much a so what.
So what? Okay, moving on. Yeah.
So you do a festival run, and it sounds like it goes pretty well.
Yes.
And it goes well at Sherman Oaks, which I can thank Chris, I think, for sending you my way.
Yeah.
Chris Kramer, who won at Sherman Oaks the year earlier, and then you show up a year later and win. You guys are now... you're tag-teaming the Sherman Oaks Film Festival.
Yeah, no, happy to do it, Chris. He's a legend.
Next year's his turn. But
all right. Yeah, no, mine won't be ready by then anyway, so yeah.
Well, you're every other year. That's the only pressure.
I'm happy for that.
No, but so following you on Facebook, I know you were quickly on to your next project.
Yeah.
And that's a feature?
No. This one's a short film again. So this second project, and it's not a comedy this time. It's a drama based on a true story, that I heard about. A friend of mine was on a road trip in California, and on a bus trip, and met this guy who just got out of prison, was on his way home. It was about a 10-hour journey to get home, but he had to report to his parole officer in like 8 hours. It's like, wow, okay, that's doesn't have much of a chance. And this was that story that I had in my back pocket for ages. Like, this is a great story. And you know, the last time he got out of... He's been in and out of jail since he was, like, a young kid. The last time he got out of jail, his mum picked him up, and the first thing she did was ask him where they could score drugs. You know, it doesn't take long, he's back in jail again. I was like, wow, like, this guy. That sounds really interesting. And I didn't know how to write it. And then I saw this video on YouTube. It's highly staged, but it's still, you know, fairly powerful, about this teacher had all his students line up. He said, I've got a $100 bill here. Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Yeah.
They get to step forward based upon...
Yeah, so whoever gets to me first...
Were you born white? And you take a step. Or are you male? And you take a step.
Yep. Are your parents still together? Take a step. Have you ever had to go hungry? Take a step. Or no, if you ever... If you've never had to go hungry, take a step. Yeah. So all of a sudden, of course, you got these Aryan kids about 7 meters from him, and the other poor kids are way at the back feeling, you know, feeling left out, as he was trying to point out. And I was like, oh, yeah, wow, not everyone starts at zero. Some people had to start at zero. Some people got all the way up to about 90 yards before they had to run another 10 yards to get him. And I was like, okay, that's kind of what this kid's story felt like he didn't start at zero. And even that wasn't enough. I was like, but I'm not qualified to say that. I'm a white male myself. Compared to most, I've had a very great upbringing, and I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, I still, I'm in the fight of my life, trying to make a life for myself. And so I was like, well, then my wife came up with the pitch. We don't all start at zero, but we're all made of the same stuff. And I was like, oh, that's it. Because, yes, it connects us. It has something to say. It's based on a true story. It's got heart. And I was like, wow, that's really good. And so I had
this. So that gave you the why?
Yeah. It wasn't a why you know, everyone's problems are exactly the same. It's no, we all have problems. They're all relative. And we should be connected by that rather than think that my problems are better than yours or your problems are better than mine or whatever. It's just like, yeah, we're all struggling. We've all got our own struggles. But we should be aware that there are other struggles out there as well. So that we had this... cast these two people from opposite sides of the tracks. This kid who had no opportunity was trying to, you know, break free of his past, and this girl was trying to make a future for herself, who had a good upbringing and didn't start at zero, and she was trying to make a future for herself, and she was really struggling, and he was struggling, but they came together, and kind of learnt from each other from their stories and learnt how different they were and how separate their worlds were. So there I had my why, and we shot this thing in January in the heat of the Australian summer in my family's hometown of Gundagai, this little country town in New South Wales. And yeah, I think we're going to have a tough time editing because every take was great. It was
it was going to be hard decisions.
Yeah, it's like, well, we could do that one or we could do that one. Yeah, so it's going to be a difficult edit in a good way.
And yeah, the best kind of problem.
Yeah, I think I hope it, you know, it all comes together, but I think it might be quite a moving film.
And you're going to start cutting soon?
Yeah, it's a busy time. The editor, who's the same editor as we had last time, he's working on a film festival that our last film is on. So when that's done in March, then I think he'll be able to get into it, and I'll be able to... I'm doing a show again in Australia.
I was going to say, you're still acting the whole way through.
Yeah, so... I will be able to fly down to Melbourne from Sydney occasionally and do some fine cuts with him and stuff like that.
And I'm sure you've been asked this or told this, but you might be the first actor I've ever met to write and direct something and not cast himself.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I got so many thoughts on that, but like,
I mean, my hunch would be your acting career is going well enough that you don't feel a need.
I just want to make it better. I don't have the time or the money. Well, money means time, I guess, to act in something that I'm in. I'm a green director, so I don't have the trust in myself to say, okay, yeah, I think I did a great take. Let's do it. Because something might have been wrong. Like, my hair could have been over my face, and that's, all of a sudden, that's a narcissistic enterprise. And I don't believe that any actor/director can totally separate themselves and look at the project objectively if they're on screen. And the ones that do, hats off to them, and they've probably had a lot more acting credits than myself. But I just think I just don't have the time to be doing a take.
Yeah, it would have compromised the job you would do as director.
Absolutely.
If you had to direct yourself.
And, I mean, there was a chance I would have had to jump in to this last one. But I'm glad I didn't. But, and it would have been okay, but it's just not the kind of thing. And I'm not doing directing to enhance my acting career. I think that's probably the main thing. I'm doing directing because I want to be a director.
Yeah, and so long term,
yeah.
Knock on wood, you'll be directing, writing and directing full time and not really acting anymore unless someone throws something at you that you can't say no to.
There's
always going to be that possibility.
No, I do really love acting. I think,
right.
I mean, the ultimate goal would be to direct a film every 2 to 3 years and, you know, be in a series as well or act in film, but also maybe do a theatre show once every 2 years.
So actually very, still completely devoted to acting.
I just love, directing, it's so easy. Like, anyone who says, oh, it's really hard. Like, acting, the craft of acting is quite difficult. Like, it can be easy, it can be difficult. But to be a great actor takes a lot of skill and effort and congratulations, because great actors are great actors for a reason. But the actual job of it, like, you learn your lines. I mean, that's the worst thing that any actor can say. But, like, you do. You learn your job. You do your job. And you get to go home. Whereas directing, you've got months of prep, and after the film's done, your work's just getting started again. Like, but after your work's done as an actor, you can go home and work on the next one. It's so easy as a profession, but as a craft, yes, acting is. But acting, I do love it, and I enjoy the immediacy of acting when it's done well.
The fact that you mentioned you still want to do theater acting with relative frequency tells me something, because, you know, that's what the real, that's, oh, it's so, such a biased thing to say, but that's like the real acting. That's like people where the actor is communicating directly to an audience.
Yep.
And no one does that to get rich.
No, no, it's just that's what kind of makes you come alive as an actor. And I think you also have control of it, and you have control as a director on film. And sometimes you don't have that control as an actor, or you don't feel like you have any control. And that sucks. But the good jobs are awesome. So much fun. So, but yeah, the ultimate goal would be to do a bit of everything.
And that was TJ Power. And I have to say, I really want this guy to be a household name. I hope, and I guess I'm predicting, that someday in the future, everyone will know who he is, everyone will love his work, and he will just be this amazing triple threat of writer, director, and actor. Okay, so let's do the house cleaning. Here's what you need to know. Discover Indie Film, that's the podcast and the TV series. The website is discoverindiefilm.com. The TV series can be watched on Amazon Prime Video. Just search for Discover Indie Film. Watch it. It's 10 half-hour episodes that include 26 short films. And if you watch it and like it, please write a review. That would mean a lot. You just have to go to Amazon.com and look it up again and write a review. I know a lot of people watch Prime Video on platforms where you can't stick your review in and your rating in right there. And if social media is your bag, at DIF Wins is the handle for Discover Indie Film everywhere. All right. Thank you for listening.